case. I believe that's Mr. Barlow and Ms. Johnson again.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If I may, before we begin, my name is Mark Stokes. I filed a motion for to add counsel so that I could make this argument today. I never got a response to that. I just wanted to make sure everything was clear as far as that before we began.
We do not have an objection.
Thank you.
You did make the motion. I think by the time we received it, at least a couple of us were already on the road. So. But I didn't understand there was any objection to it, so certainly you may proceed. Do you wish to reserve any rebuttal time?
I would. 5 minutes, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Again, good morning. My name is Mark Stokes. I represent Brendan Vitek. There's really only one issue in this appeal, and that is a double jeopardy analysis of whether these two statutes, 46.2-301 and 46.2-391, whether 301 is a lesser included offense of 391. And for simplicity purposes, if I could, I'd refer to them as the misdemeanor and the felony instead of listing out the numbers each and every time, 301 being the misdemeanor and 391 being the felony. Briefly, the procedural history was that Brendan Vitek was originally charged with a felony DUI, third offense within 5 years, and the misdemeanor of the driving suspended. He waived his preliminary hearing and was pled guilty to the misdemeanor in General District Court. The felony was certified. He did not appeal the misdemeanor conviction of the driving unsuspended. In circuit court, the Commonwealth brought via direct indictment a felony indictment for the felony driving unsuspended under 391. Mr. Vitek stipulated to the evidence was sufficient to convict him of that offense, but made an argument that the indictment should be dismissed under the grounds of double jeopardy, and also, as you can see from the record, under a Virginia statute, under similar grounds. That issue is not on appeal, only the double jeopardy, and the conviction for the DUI is also not on appeal today. We're only addressing the conviction for the felony driving unsuspended or revoked. The merits of the case are somewhat simple. It's a simply analysis of the statutes in and of itself. The Commonwealth has raised two issues in its brief, alleging that the merits should not be reached. I think it's most appropriate that I address those first. First is that the record was insufficiently preserved in this case. What we had was it was an analogous to a conditional guilty plea in a sense, even though Mr. Vitek pled not guilty. He stipulated the evidence and made argument regarding this issue. The judge asked that the parties brief the issue, and I can respond specifically to what he was asking to be briefed if the court wishes me to, and then came back and he was convicted of those offenses. The judge denied the motion. The Commonwealth's position is that the record is insufficient given the fact that the sentencing transcript was not provided. I can't speak as to why it wasn't provided, but in this case, the record is clear in the fact that the motion was made, the argument were heard, and he came back, and the record is clear. We have in the appendix a sentencing order dated May the 19th, in which he was found guilty of the offense on which the motion was made. It is clear that it was denied on the grounds on which it was made, and I think the record is plain that this court can consider this issue on appeal, given the fact that the issue was raised and therefore preserved, and then it was denied by having him convicted. Second issue that the Commonwealth raises is that the argument is barred by Rule 5A18, and that gets me to the point where I was mentioning that the specifics of the issue to be briefed. You can read from the transcripts, and specifically from page 24, there was some discussion about Virginia Code Section 19.2-294, and you can read from on page 24 in the second paragraph, in the bottom of the first paragraph, where the judge is asking for the help of the parties, and he wanted to read the code sections and ask for a brief on those issues. The brief that was supplied, as the Commonwealth noted, was only on the code section, and I think it's clear from the record also that that's what the judge was asking for. The argument was raised as to the Blockberger analysis on page 22, in that the and as I get to the merits, I'll go through it as well, that the elements of the misdemeanor are all included in the elements of the felony. So the two issues that the Commonwealth has raised, that the argument is barred by Rule 5A18, given the fact that the appellant did not properly preserve it, and that the record is insufficient, I think are cured by the record that we have and what we can see from the transcripts. Moving to the merits of the case, the Blockberger analysis, it's a traditional constitutional analysis, says that each statute must have one element that the other does not in order for it to pass constitutional muster. In this case, we have a misdemeanor which has three elements. One, that the defendant's license is suspended or revoked. Two, that the defendant had actual notice of that suspension or revocation. And three, that the defendant operated a motor vehicle. There's numerous ways and alternative possibilities as to how that person could have come suspended or revoked. The statute allows for suspensions by the commissioner or revocations by the commissioner, suspensions for failure to pay fines, and more broadly, by any statute of the Commonwealth that allows for. And then we have a felony statute which requires all the exact same elements and adds two. The three, again, are the same, that the license is suspended or revoked, that the defendant had actual notice of the suspension or revocation, and that the defendant operated a motor vehicle. The two added elements are that because the revocation is because of a prior conviction for DUI, and that the defendant was actually driving under the influence at the time of the arrest. What we have is two elements that have the exact same elements and only add two on the felony. And you can see from the procedural history that he pled guilty to the lesser offense of the misdemeanor. And then on direct indictment to the felony, the Blockberger test, in Taylor v. Commonwealth, this court said that the determination of whether one offense is a lesser included offense of another is made by examining the elements in the abstract, which is why we're only discussing the elements here, not the facts of the case. But more specifically, you're only analyzing the elements of the crime that must be proved in order to sustain a conviction. Parts of the statute that are not required for any conviction do not factor into a lesser included analysis. So the Commonwealth made several arguments in its brief about the alternative methods by which the misdemeanor can be proved in court. But the only elements to be considered today are the elements that are necessary to be included in any conviction under the record. The cases that the Commonwealth cited, they cited three, Davis, Hudgens, and Johnson, are all distinguishable in that each one of those, there's an added element in each, and they fail the classic Blockberger test on its face. The Davis case is a DUI and an involuntary manslaughter case. There's an additional element of a blood alcohol content in the DUI, and the involuntary manslaughter, there's the additional element added. So there's different elements in each case. In this case, we don't have that. We have the same elements and then added elements on the felony. In the Huggins case, Hudgens case, we have the grand larceny from a person argument that grand larceny from a person was a lesser included offense of robbery. Again, we have additional elements in each offense that are different from the other, which makes it fail the Blockberger test. The third case that the Commonwealth cites on the merits is Johnson, arguing that maiming by mob and malicious wounding is a lesser included offense of maiming by mob. Again, the court found that there was an additional element in each. We do not have that here, and this court has stated very simply in certain terms in Kaufman that an offense is a lesser included offense of the greater if every commission of the greater offense is necessarily also a commission of the lesser offense, and I think that's what we have here in this case. Every single commission of the felony driving suspended or revoked is also by definition a commission of the misdemeanor. There's no
The Commonwealth makes, I think, a distinction about in 46.2-391, the felony statute, that it deals only with revocations, while 46.2-301, the misdemeanor, deals with either revocations or suspensions. Why wouldn't that be a difference under Blockberger?
It goes back to the fact that you only examine the elements necessary to sustain any conviction under the statute. It's not an added element. It's simply an alternative, and an alternative does not make a double jeopardy, does not fail the double jeopardy test. A revocation under 391 is also a possible conviction under 301 because there's an alternative. It's a suspension or a revocation. The Commonwealth cites at one point a case referencing Vitale, and I believe it's Davis that quotes Vitale that says that all elements must be the same to pass double jeopardy. But the Vitale case continues on a little bit and quotes Henry Nelson that says, a person who has been convicted of a crime having several elements in it included in it may not be subsequently tried for a lesser included offense. An offense consisting solely of one or more elements of the crime for which he has already been convicted. And they say under Brown v. Ohio and Harris v. Oklahoma, two Supreme Court cases, the reverse is also true. And that's what we have here. We have a somewhat more restrictive greater offense and a more broad lesser offense, which is a unique situation. In fact, it's a case of first impression for this court for these specific statutes. It's typically the other way around in these analyses, that the greater offense is more broad than the lesser offense. But in this case, according to Henry Nelson, that the reverse would also be true. The reverse is true in that the more specific does not preclude a double jeopardy defense on the lesser included offense. I see that my 5 minutes is remaining. I'll respond. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I remain Victoria Johnson, and I still represent the Commonwealth. This conviction should be affirmed for three reasons, Your Honors. First, there's an insufficient record to address the appeal. Second, the appeal is barred by Rule 5A18 because there is no ruling on the double jeopardy issue in the record. And third, a violation of 46-2-391, or to use the appellant's terminology, the felony, is not always a violation of 46-2-301. Or to use the appellant's words, the misdemeanor, because a defendant can violate the felony statute without necessarily violating the misdemeanor statute. I'd like to start with my procedural default arguments, if I may. The difficulty with this case is that we have some discussion about the 292 argument, the former Jeopardy statute argument, and the double Jeopardy argument in the trial transcript, the bench trial transcript. However, the judge continued the proceeding out and asked for briefing. I have the briefing attached as an addendum to my brief. But then we don't know what happened really after that. The only thing that we have is the sentencing order that says that the motion to strike was denied and the defendant was convicted. There were two grounds. Well, let me back up. First, a motion to strike typically denotes a sufficiency of the evidence argument, not a motion to strike on a motion to dismiss on double jeopardy grounds. So I think that since the trial court speaks through its orders, that's unclear in the first instance, the fact that we're talking about a motion to strike. For all of us know, only having the appellate record before us, there could have been a motion to strike on sufficiency of the evidence at the sentencing hearing, and that is what the trial court is referring to. I simply don't know because it's not in the record. For appellate purposes, we don't know. As far as the motion to dismiss for double jeopardy grounds, which I think may have been referred to as a motion to strike at some point, we don't know why that was denied. We don't know if it was denied on the 292 statutory ground or on the double jeopardy ground. The closest thing we know is from Vitek's brief at 3, which states that the trial court ruled that the conviction was proper under 19-2-294 and did not address the double jeopardy issue. And that is what gives rise to my 5A18 argument. This court has held in the past that when there is just no ruling by a trial court, there is nothing on an issue, there is nothing for this court to review. I draw the court's attention to the Reiner case that's cited on brief. There, a defendant made two arguments concerning a hearsay objection. It's fairly complicated. One involved one level of hearsay, and the other objection was second level hearsay, and only obtained an objection on, or pardon me, a ruling on one of the objections. And the court, this, I believe, is actually the Supreme Court of Virginia, excuse me, held that the argument as to the second objection on which the trial court had never ruled was not adequately preserved for appellate review because there was simply nothing for this court to review. And that is the situation that we're in this case. There's just nothing for this court to review. If the court has questions about my procedural default arguments, I'm happy to answer them. If not, I'll move on to the merits. Okay. As to the merits, the appellant is correct that under the classic Blockberger test, which is a rule of statutory construction, this court reviews the elements of the offenses in the abstract. In doing that here, to give effect to the intent of the General Assembly in determining whether the General Assembly desired to make or intended to make to criminalize two separate crimes or to alternatively publish or punish the same conduct. Here, it's pretty clear on the statutes that these are two different crimes. The General Assembly intended in creating the misdemeanor statute to have a statute of broad application to punish as a misdemeanor people who drive suspended with a suspended operator's license for pretty much any reason. You know, they could be suspended by the court, by operation of law, by failure to pay court costs, by statute, by operation of statute, and can be operating a motor vehicle and violate that statute. The felony statute at issue here, however, is much more involved and was plainly intended to discourage recidivist drunk drivers from operating on the highways of the Commonwealth. As Judge Beals pointed out, there is a distinction between the misdemeanor and the felony in that in the felony statute, the operator's license must be revoked by the commissioner, which is a different element. And there are some additional elements. There are the predicates, and there are the elements that you have to be driving at the time you're stopped under the felony, either in violation of 18.2.266 or driving in such a way that endangers the life and liberty of others, or pardon me, the life and property of others. So there are these disparate elements under the Blockberger test. Going more towards the appellant argument, though, of the lesser included offense argument, is that every commission of the felony statute is not necessarily a violation of the misdemeanor statute. And that is plain in examining the statutory language. I think that the best example of this is, as almost goofy as it sounds, the moped language in both of the statutes. In the general misdemeanor statute, a person can run around on a moped all day long without violating that misdemeanor statute. However, once someone is convicted under the felony, the 391, that individual cannot operate a moped. Therefore, an individual can violate the felony statute, the 391, by operating a moped on the highways after having been revoked or suspended by anyone, by the commissioner, and not violate the misdemeanor statute. So every violation of the felony statute is not in all cases a violation of the misdemeanor statute. I believe I said that correctly. Did I say it backwards? I have a hard time with that sometimes. I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. Furthermore, going to appellant's point regarding alternative elements, actually the federal courts have addressed that issue, and I...
Can you address Mr. Stokes's point in answer to my question that the revocation or suspension language isn't really an additional element because it's an alternative?
Yes, Your Honor, I can. The federal courts have actually addressed that, and I cited a Fifth Circuit case that I believe I have in my notes because I can't recall the name of it. Essentially, the gist of the case law is that, and I apologize, that is in my brief, and I can grab it for the court real quickly, but the gist of that case law is that since every violation of the statute in the alternative can, the alternatives don't create a double jeopardy issue. I'm not articulating this very well at all. If the course indulges, thank you. I apologize. Sometimes the courts just say it so much better than I can. There it is. Okay. When it's Austin v. Kane, and it's from the Fifth Circuit. It's cited at page 8 in my brief. And the language that the court used there was that where an offense constitutes only one of several alternative elements of another offense, the two are not the same offense for double jeopardy purposes. So the alternatives, such as the revocation versus the suspension and the commissioner versus the court or operation of law, do not give rise to a double jeopardy violation. Instead, the alternatives provide different means of conviction. So when there are alternatives, that means that they're not the same element. I don't feel like I'm articulating that very well, but did that answer the court's question?
I think so, and your cite to Kane and the circuit's reasoning.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. I don't know why, but I have a difficulty articulating that particular aspect of double jeopardy law. Are there other questions about... I think that's my argument on the merits. Are there other questions regarding that?
I don't have any additional questions at all, and possibly the reason you have difficulty with it, Ms. Johnson, is because it's a difficult and very confusing area, we all have difficulty with it from time to time.
It is difficult to articulate that little part for me. The one thing that I know for absolute certain sure is that Blockberger is a test of statutory construction, and I believe that looking at the two statutes here, the General Assembly plainly intended two different statutes to punish two different kinds of criminal conduct. And for that reason, I ask that the court affirm the conviction. Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In response to the Commonwealth's argument regarding Rule 5A18, that the only indication we have regarding whether the argument is sufficiently preserved, using 5A18 is specifically unique, given the fact that 5A18 is also the rule which contains an exception, the ends of justice exception. It was not raised in the brief, but I think it can be raised at this time here. Even so, if the court is inclined to agree with the Commonwealth that the failure to have the sentencing on the record is insufficient, the ends of justice can apply to show that with the record being plain, given the fact he was convicted, it would be a miscarriage of justice if the court finds for the appellant on the merits on this case to be dismissed for that procedural error. I think the ends of justice exception would apply if the court finds for the appellant on the merits that any insufficiency in the preservation could be cured by the exception of the ends of justice. Regarding the intent of the General Assembly to create two separate statutes, I believe before we go to the intent of the General Assembly, we look to the words alone and if they have plain meaning where to assign them. And I think the words of the statutes alone add elements that are plain and understandable to be read. In regards to the moped being a potential outcome in which the felony is not also a commission of the misdemeanor, the wording of the misdemeanor of 301 cites the fact that a moped shall not be included for the purposes of maintaining conviction under the section, the phrase motor vehicle or any self-propelled machinery or equipment shall not include mopeds. Harkening back to my argument before, that this court has said that the only elements to be considered of whether it's not a lesser included offense are the elements necessary to sustain any conviction. The fact that a moped is involved is not an element necessary to sustain any conviction and is in fact included here as a defense. It's not an element of the offense necessary for sustaining a conviction in any way, shape, or form. It's a defense to the statute provided by codified in the statute here. The elements, again, are only the fact that the driver has been revoked or suspended, that they know about it, and that they drive a motor vehicle. And the felony adds those exact same three elements, and it adds the additional two, at least in the subsection that we're dealing with here today, that the person was revoked for DUI and is DUI or endangering life at the same time. For those reasons, we ask this court would reverse Mr. Vitek's conviction, because an interpretation of Blockberger on the merits of this case that would allow this to not be a lesser included, I think, would be a new interpretation among the cases that are on the record now. I think any holding that this offense, this driving while suspended misdemeanor, is not a lesser included of the felony would be an entirely different interpretation of what's on the record as far as the elements test. Again, the case is cited in the Commonwealth's argument that the requirement of suspension is not an element of the felony. That is not, we're not looking for what's not an element, we're looking for what is an element. The elements are clear, and the elements are only added in the felony, and nothing is added to the misdemeanor. There are no distinct elements in the misdemeanor. For those reasons, we ask this court to reverse the conviction.
Thank you.
Thank you.